Welcome to a podcast from the Irish Linen Centre and Lisburn Museum. My name is Paul. Today we will be speaking to Professor Eileen Murphy. Eileen is Professor of Archaeology at Queen's University Belfast and an expert in ancient human remains and burial practices. In this podcast, we will discuss Eileen's career, the sensitivity of researching human remains, and I hope to learn more about Tacabuddy, the Belfast mummy. Good morning, Eileen. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning.
Eileen, can you please tell us about your job and what you do?
Okay, so I'm Professor of Archaeology in Queen's. My work involves bioarchaeology, so I deal a lot with human remains. I'm also very involved in, and I'm a co-director with Colm Donnelly of our Centre for Community Archaeology in Queen's, because part of the work we do as archaeologists is public dissemination of interest, and that's a real passion of mine. So research-wise, a lot of my work is human remains, including Tacabuddy, who I'll be talking about in our talk.
That's this evening, and fully booked.
Oh.
So it is oversubscribed. You mentioned Tacabuddy.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Tacabuddy, and how did you get involved with what's been called the Belfast mummy?
Okay, so Tacabuddy, she's been in Belfast for over 185 years, so she's very much a part of Belfast culture. You know, there's been so she's a mummified Egyptian woman. She came to Belfast in 1834 because a young man called Thomas Greig basically bought her when he was on his grand tour in Egypt. And, you know, he could have brought her back and just had her on display for his own personal entertainment, but he was quite forward thinking and he donated her to the Belfast Museum, which is down in the city centre.
Mm-hmm.
So then she was unwrapped in 1835, and she's, you know, we know a lot about her since that time, and we've been finding out more and more through more recent 21st century projects. And Tacabuddy has been a big influence on me in my career as an archaeologist, because I've got very fond memories of going to the Ulster Museum with my mum and my cousins, my cousin Joanne, and we always made a beeline to go and see Tacabuddy. And she's one of the big reasons I became an archaeologist and why I ended up studying, you know, human remains and the remains of our ancestors.
I think it could be argued that it's probably the most iconic object in any museum collection in the country.
I think so, but we do have to be very careful about the word object, because
mm-hmm, I know.
This is something we're always very mindful of, you know, in terms of ethics and, you know, should we display human remains? And if we display them, it has to be done in a way that's very sympathetic to the person. And, you know, in my work and in the book that I did with Rosalie David that we edited, you know, mm-hmm. with lots of collaborators, we wanted to explore Tacabuddy as a woman when she was alive, and then look at what actually happened to her, you know, her body when she died, and then look at, you know, her sort of persona as a museum, as you said, object or artifact.
Yes.
But she still is a person.
Yes.
And you know, museums and archaeologists were very, very careful about trying to, you know, make sure we remember that mummified remains are people, and even, you know, skeletal remains in museums. So that's an area where a lot of my students here get a lot of schooling in. You know, like last week we were in the Ulster Museum actually looking at Tacabuddy, and I've been getting them to consider, you know, how best should we display human remains, you know, to make it sort of most sympathetic and most ethical. But also, you know, they are very valuable in terms of informing the public about our ancestors and people in the past.
In researching and analysing human remains, it does raise many moral and ethical questions. I understand that one of your favourite quotes is from an article by Seamus Heaney, where he says, "Sensitivity to the past contributes to our lives in a necessary and salutary way. It is not just a temperamental or intellectual accident, like a talent for chess or a passion for whiskey, but a fundamental gift that is potentially as life-enhancing and civilising as our gift for love." Does this quote go some way to explaining why you do what you do?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a very powerful quote, you know, and it's very sympathetic in the way it considers the past, but it also has, you know, a lot of emotive qualities in the quote. And that's something in my work dealing with human remains, you know, archaeologists, I think in general, we are very privileged in that our profession, we do encounter human remains quite routinely. And this is why we have our very strict sort of ethical codes and codes of conduct. But I suppose in the 21st century, archaeology has sort of evolved that we can consider, you know, feelings and emotions and think about children and think about family connections and feelings of loss. You know, in the past, that sort of approach would have been frowned on. But I think our discipline is now mature enough that we can look at people and remember their people and that they would have lived lives like ourselves. You know, even though they're from, you know, distant cultures and distant time periods, they still had fundamental humanity.
Yes. You mentioned the research and studies that you carried out in 2018-19 as part of a multidisciplinary team on the study of the life and times of Takaburi. The story is told in the book that you and Rosalie edited in 2021. Can you talk about that project? And
yes, so the Takaburi project, it actually started back about 2006, sort of up to about 2009. There was an initial burst of activity then, and this was because the Ulster Museum had closed for that major period of refurbishment. So it meant there was an opportunity to study Takaburi. So at that time, one of the big things that happened was that Takaburi was actually transported over to the University of Manchester, where she was subject to a whole range of imaging techniques, so lots of CT scans and x-rays. So we got quite a lot of information at that time, particularly about her hair. Her hair is quite iconic because she's got this beautiful red sort of curled hair that's up in a big bun. And one of the PhD students in the University of Manchester at that time did her research on Takaburi's hair. This was Dr. Natalie McCreesh, and she was able to talk about how it had been cut and curled around the time that she died, how it was naturally red in colour, and just how it had been put up in its style with a kind of a camphor gel. So we kind of, at that time, one of the big things we realised was that her hair must have been very important to her. There was a package in her chest, so up in the top left corner, and at the time we thought that must be the heart, because the heart was the ticket to the afterlife. But if you fast forward 10 years, imaging analysis has come on in leaps and bounds, and Dr. Robert Loynes was able to have another look at all the images that were taken in the previous period of research and find out so much more. So he was able to show that Takaburi's heart was indeed in her chest, but it was right in the middle. And you could see the four chambers and everything, and it had been wrapped, which was quite unusual. So the package over on the left was nothing to do with her heart. But what he found that was probably the most staggering, I suppose, discovery was that she had a huge trauma to her left shoulder, and it looked like she'd been killed. So this was a big shock, because I always thought she looked very serene and peaceful in her sarcophagus, but no, she'd met an untimely end at the hand of another. And it seems that somebody had, you know, wielded an axe and it hit her from behind, and it cut right down through her shoulder. So what seems to have happened was that they then plugged the wound with that pack that we were looking at in 2008. Now, whether that was to try to make her body whole again for the afterlife, or whether it was simply to plug the wound to staunch the bleeding, because it would have been a catastrophic wound, you know, and her lung would have collapsed and she probably would have bled out and died pretty quickly.
The book is a fascinating insight into the research. I was gobsmacked by the fact that there was one small dental cavity identified in the scans for a lady who was, it's estimated, was late 20s, possibly early 30s. So
Takaburi, yes, so she died, that we were all in agreement, even the antiquarians back in 1835, that she died sort of in her 20s, maybe early 30s. But she would have been elite, because her father was a priest of Amun, and that meant she probably had quite good food. You know, she'd have been eating the food that was brought to the temple. But most Egyptian teeth are very worn down because of the desert sand, and you know, you would see a lot more decay. So her teeth were pretty pristine, and the little caries that you've, presumably you saw the pictures, like, it's very distinct, it's quite small caries. But her teeth are in very good condition, and the antiquarians, they were describing her pretty teeth. You know, they'd obviously had a look into her mouth. And even just the way her tongue is positioned very far down in her mouth, and her mouth is, there's a big cavity, so we think there might have been something in her mouth that maybe the antiquarians removed.
Right. And what's planned for further research or study? Is there anything?
There's no real plan at the minute, but there, in 2008, like, there were all those loose ends, and thankfully we were able to address most of them in the 2018 study. There are things that I would love to see done. So, for example, we have her mother's, the DNA, the mitochondrial DNA, which tells about her mother's heritage. And that produced really interesting results because it showed a very unusual haplotype that hadn't been found in any other ancient Egyptian person. And it seemed to have closest parallels to people from kind of Bulgaria and, you know, much further north than Egypt. So there is a suspicion that her mother wasn't Egyptian. And that's why Takabudi, you know, her hair, the cross section, it looks more Caucasian than African, and the colour and the sort of the texture of it. So the current thinking is maybe her mother was from outside Egypt and her father may have been Egyptian, but it would be lovely to look at the paternal DNA. So that would be one thing. And also a really new technique in ancient Egyptian biomedical studies is proteomics. And Professor Tony Fremont in Manchester, he did some initial proteomics work on one of the tiny samples that was taken from Takabudi in 2018. You know, we're talking like less than a gram, and they can find so much information. And he was able to identify that this was muscle tissue, and, you know, there were high levels of enzymes, which he sort of said were maybe to do with sort of increased levels of activity. So maybe she was running from her assailant. You know, we don't know, but it sort of fits together quite nicely with how we know she died. But you can get a lot more information from proteomics now, and it would just be really interesting to try to get another little tiny sample and see if she had any other underlying diseases, or really was just a fit and healthy young woman who met an untimely death.
So more chapters to come then.
Well, I hope so, but it really depends on the guys in the Ulster Museum, who I have to say have been incredibly supportive of the research projects, you know, and the friends of the Ulster Museum as well. So who knows, maybe in another 10 years there'll be another bout of research.
I'm going to move on to, you recently brought the Young Archaeologist Club to the museum to see the British Museum touring exhibition, Egyptian Hieroglyphs, Unlock the Mystery. Did they enjoy their trip?
Oh, they had a fantastic time, as did the leaders. So we had Gareth, and I think it was Anne, brought us round the exhibition, and it was very interactive, and the kids enjoyed, you know, doing the rubbings and, you know, just the little hands-on activities they could do. And they enjoyed seeing the hieroglyph of a woman giving birth, actually, because it is just a woman and a little head, and it's very kind of to the point. So they all liked that. And then afterwards we went to the activity zone, and they were able to write their names in hieroglyphs, and they made some amulets, and some of the amulets were incredibly creative, you know, lovely eyes of Horus. And so they had a brilliant time. And Gareth also, because he was a magician in a former life, he was able to tell some truly abysmal archaeology jokes, which we all enjoyed.
Good. I'm going to move now right to this week. The Ulster Folk Museum announced the completion of the rebuilding of the Ballantagard court tomb, a tomb that is old in the pyramids. What was it like working on that project?
Okay, so this was it was very much a collaborative project. So it was our Centre of Community Archaeology, some of the civil engineers in Queen's, the National Museum, NI guys, and then the Richmond community group. Mm-hmm. So in terms of my involvement, I would have been involved with that tomb many years ago when it was behind the Ulster Museum, and I would have taken my students there, and they would have learned how to survey a monument. So it was a wonderful resource for us, you know, just on the just across the road from Queen's. But then whenever the museum was being refurbished, the tomb was dismantled and put into storage. So it was really the Richmond group, they were pushing to get the tomb reinstated, and a decision then was made for it to be reinstated up at Cultraw, which is just a wonderful location for it. So in Queen's, our Centre for Community Archaeology, Colm Donnelly and Brian Sloan set to using the photographs we had and the plans we had generated with our students decades ago, and trying to sort of recreate where each stone would have went. So they basically made like a plan, and they worked with a guy called John Manili, who was working in geography, and he did 3D scans then and made models of each stone. And then that was kind of like, it was like a jigsaw piecing it all together. And then that was kind of the blueprint for the guys in the museum, their engineers, to then reconstruct the tomb. So I went to the launch last week, and it was just lovely to see it out in the countryside in a sort of natural setting. And I know it's far from Armagh, where it was originally found, but I think where it's located now, you know, generations of people are going to be able to enjoy it and visit it. And I really hope it will instill, you know, a curiosity about archaeology and about, you know, our Neolithic ancestors, you know, with kids who go and visit it. So I think it's worked out really well, and I'm delighted to see the tomb at Cultural.
I know Egyptology is fascinating for many people, mm-hmm. but it is wonderful that we have artifacts and from 6,000 years ago in our province that can inspire the young.
Mm-hmm.
So it is. Eileen, thank you for spending time with us today. Listeners who want to know more about Takaboodi, Eileen's book, The Life and Times of Takaboodi in Ancient Egypt, is a must read. Thank you so much for coming today. Thank you.
Thank you.